Thank you. Be seated.
The court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Laidlaw Wealth Systems versus City of Wilmer.
May it please the court, Mr. Doug Alexander will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for the court.
Please, the court. Doug Alexander representing petitioner Laidlaw. I'm joined at council table by Mr. Kerry Kamak, who represents petitioner Ecoland and has since approximately 1992. He's been kind enough to defer the presentation of this oral argument to me in its entirety. Your Honor, this application for writ of error presents a narrow legal issue, and that is whether a type A general law municipality with a population of less than 5,000 can accomplish by annexation that which all parties agree it cannot accomplish by incorporation, and that is achieve a superficial area of greater than 4 square miles. This court's resolution of that issue will depend upon this court's disposition of a key case, that is the 1953 decision of the Waco Court of Appeals in the city of Deer Park, a case which has been cited in all the briefs before this court. That case decided, applying sound rules of statutory construction, that the same limitations territorially that apply to incorporations also apply to annexation. Now, interestingly enough, this court now has before it three suggested dispositions with respect to that case. The petitioners submit that this court should do what the Fort Worth Court of Appeals did in the recent decision of City of Northlake, and that is to follow City of Deer Park. The City of Wilmer, for its part, has asked this court to effectively ignore the City of Deer Park decision, arguing that it represents nothing more than dicta as to the issue before this court. 1 week ago, this court received a third suggested disposition in an amicus brief submitted on behalf of the City of Parker and the Texas Municipal League, in which it was urged that this court overrule the City of Deer Park decision, apparently conceding that it does not represent dicta. And let me stop and say this, that the arguments advanced by the Texas Municipal League in support of that position are brand new arguments. These are arguments based upon the subsequent adoption of the Municipal Annexation Act. They are arguments that were never urged by the City of Wilmer, either in the trial court, the Court of Appeals, or before this court. And the consequence of that is that this court does not have the benefit of any briefing from our side of the aisle with respect to that argument. And what we intend to do in light of that is to supply the court with that briefing in the course of the next several weeks. And to the extent that time permits today, I will go ahead and try to address some of those arguments, which I am prepared to do. There are two key points which I wish to urge before this court today, which apply to all the arguments asserted by the City of Wilmer and by the Texas Municipal League. The first point is that contrary to the argument of the City of Wilmer and contrary to the conclusion of the Dallas Court of Appeals, the City of Deer Park case does not represent dicta. And as such, it represents the settled law on the issue before this court that has been standing, it's longstanding, now has been standing for 40 years. The second key point I wish to urge before this court is that in that 40-year period, the legislature has not seen fit to amend the statutory scheme at issue here to reflect any disagreement with the City of Deer Park's statutory construction. And under principles of law that have been embraced by this court, this issue has now become a policy matter for the legislature and not a matter properly resolved or overruled by this court. I will turn now to the discussion of the dicta And then I will turn to the other key point. Simply stated, the City of Deer Park decision does not represent dicta with respect to the limitation, territorial limitation on annexation. This is clear from reading both the Court of Appeals opinion in that case and the subsequent Supreme Court opinions, in which the background is quite detailed. In that case, the territorial limitation on annexation was advanced by the state as an independent ground for affirmance of the trial court's judgment. It was advanced in the Court of Appeals by counterpoint, it was replied to by the city, and it was ultimately resolved by the Court of Appeals against the state and in favor, against the city and in favor of the state. Then, before the Supreme Court, that very issue, pointed to as a holding by the city, was brought forth as a point of error in the application for writ of error. It was point number three, as a matter of fact. And so it is quite clear that both the parties and the court in that case clearly understood that the holding with respect to the territorial limitation on the annexation was a holding of the court and not dicta of the court. Now, how then did the Dallas Court of Appeals reach a contrary conclusion? Well, they don't discuss it in their opinion, but the City of Wilmer's brief is illuminating on this point. Essentially, the argument is this, that there were a couple of issues before the court in City of Deer Park. The first issue, and I'll use modern nomenclature because there has been a change in the law. The first issue is whether there had been a valid conversion by the City of Deer Park from a Type B municipality to a Type A municipality. And what is urged by the City of Wilmer is that since the court resolved that issue contrary to the city, the court did not have to then go on and decide the other ground for affirmance, that is the territorial restriction issue. And the short answer to that is, I mean, that is right as far as it goes. Having decided the one issue against the city, there was not a compulsion to decide the other, but having decided the other, as was the prerogative of the court, that point, that ground, is every much a holding of the court as the first one. And there's a case I'll cite to the court on that. It's Casparis. I only cite it because I don't think it is in the briefing. It's Casparis, C-A-S-P-A-R-I-S. It's a writ refused decision of the from the Austin Court of Appeals, 65 Southwest 2nd, 404 at 406. And it's a simple sentence. It says, where an appellate court places its decision on two or more distinct grounds, each is as much an authoritative determination as the other, and neither can be disregarded as over to dictum, which is precisely what occurred here. They decided the one adverse to the city, and they decided the other. Both are equally authoritative, neither is dicta. Now, what is the significance of that? That brings us to the second key point. Because this was the holding of the court, clearly, it has represented the settled law on this point for some 40 years. If you go to the annotations, and fortunately in this statutory construction case, you don't have to go digging through the basic past statutes. It's right on the shelf. It's volumes 2A and 2B of the revised statutes. If you go to the annotations for 971, there's the holding of the Waco Court of Appeals on this point, and there's no other annotation contrary to that. Now, the significance of that is, this court has said, and we cite in the briefs, this is under the Marmon decision and the Moss decision of this court, when the Supreme Court, when a construction has been placed upon a statute, and the legislature does nothing, has it in its power to change that construction by amendment, but declines to do so, or decides not to do so, it then becomes a policy matter for the legislature. And in this case, actually, we can go one step further, because not only do we have a situation where the same statutory scheme that was at issue back in 1953 has never been amended. To the contrary, it has been reenacted without substantive change. This same statutory scheme is now part of the local government code. It was placed there as part of the general revisions ordered by the legislature in 1987. And if you look at section 1.001 of the local government code, it is clear that this was a non-substantive change because that is what it says. So we have now a situation where the same statutory scheme construed in 1953 has been reenacted by the legislature in 1987 without material change.
The amici argue that their whole system's really changed.
Yes,
since
they
1963.
Have. And I'd be happy to turn to that argument now. What the amici have says is, and it is a fundamentally different approach than this other one, but what they say is, look, we essentially, and it's sub silentio, but we concede City of Deer Park is not dicta. We concede that it may have been, that it was properly decided when decided. But now the whole system has changed with the adoption of the Municipal Annexation Act in 1963. And what their argument is, and again it's a new argument, but what their argument is that by adopting the Municipal Annexation Act in 1963, what the legislature effectively did was to repeal the construction placed on the City of Deer Park decision placed by the court on the prior statutes in 1953. Now, why is that flawed? Why is that flawed? The reason it's flawed is that we can look to the Municipal Annexation Act itself, and it has a cumulative provision in it, which says that the provisions of this act, i.e. the Municipal Annexation Act, shall not repeal Chapter 231, not applicable here, or any other law or part of law upon the subject of which the provisions of this act relate unless they are expressly inconsistent. Okay? And so what the legislature has said in the Municipal Annexation Act is we are not repealing any other statutes relating to annexation unless they're expressly inconsistent. Now, bearing that in mind, what did the court do in 1987? I'm sorry, what did the legislature revise or do in 1987? Well, if there had been any express inconsistency, what they would have done is to drop the territorial restrictions. But they did not. And if you look at section 1.001 of the local government code, again, what they say is, putting out the objectives for the revisionary program, among the things that we do are to eliminate, repeal, duplicative, or other ineffective provisions. And they didn't touch it at law. And the reason for that is that there isn't anything in the Municipal Annexation Act which is expressly inconsistent with the territorial limitation, restriction on annexation recognized by the City of Deer Park. What the Municipal Annexation Act does do is add other limitations. And the reason it did it was, if you go back and do some history on this, it was a response to the fact that in Texas, under the 1912 Home Rule Amendment, the state of Texas had the most liberal annexation policies in the country. And that's stated by the Texas Legislative Council's report that was submitted. So what the Municipal Annexation Act did was to come in with a series of limitations. Now, in enacting those limitations, it didn't go and repeal any pre-existing limitations. And there's nothing inconsistent to say that we have now added to the relatively few limitations that existed before this whole new set. Not only is there no implied inconsistency, there is no inconsistency expressed or implied. And as a result, that argument is fundamentally flawed. that argument that the Municipal Annexation Act has affected a repealer, which is the thrust of the argument, is just flat wrong.
But it would mean that a city limited to 4 square miles would have extraterritorial jurisdiction.
That is correct.
That it couldn't do anything about. I mean, it would just have it, but it could never annex or do anything in that jurisdiction.
Well, yes and no. It can do things there are powers granted by the Municipal Annexation Act with respect to extraterritorial jurisdiction. I see my time's expired. But, I mean, there are powers that are given by the statute for extraterritorial jurisdiction. So, I mean, that's something that's added by the statute. But yes, that's right. They could not annex into that territory.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Kevin. Porter's right here. Argument from response.
May it please the court, Mr. Henry W. Fielder and Mr. John Patrick Atkins will present arguments for the respondent. Mr. Fielder will begin with the first 10 minutes.
Mr. Fielder, response to Justice Hicks' last question. What powers would a municipality, what powers does a municipality have in its extraterritorial jurisdiction other than ultimate annexation?
Very few. I would say probably has police powers. It can provide municipal services, but I would not think it'd be able to tax. So in this case, if this court holds in favor of Laidlaw in this case, there would be a great many cities out there who have annexed their extraterritorial jurisdiction who now have improperly taxed the people who live in those areas for a number of years. May it please the court, to begin with, I would like to correct the statement of facts that are contained in the Supreme Court Journal. It stated therein that Laidlaw was granted a permit from the state of Texas to construct the municipal landfill. In fact, this permit was denied. I would like to first address the point of error number 4, which deals with or relates to the City of Wilmer case being in conflict with the Northlake case. And the attorney for petitioner has fairly represented the issue in that case. The court in the Wilmer case recognized from the beginning that Wilmer was a Type A municipality and that it was annexing property under Section 43.024, which is the first one on the left over here. A code section dealing was entitled very clearly and dealing specifically with Type A municipality annexations. The court in the Northlake case and in the Deer Park case held that the City of Northlake and the City of Deer Park were actually Type B municipalities and therefore subject to the limitations and restrictions contained in 43.025, the statute on your right over here. What the petitioner relies on is the argument contained in dicta in the Deer Park case and the Northlake case to the effect that if the facts were different, the court would have held that Type A municipality, that as a Type A municipality, the annexation would have been void. This is an opinion given by both courts, unrelated to the actual facts that the case is decided. In effect, by statement, the courts were saying, oh, by the way, if you had been successful in becoming a Type A municipality, which you were not, you still lose. The petitioner relies very heavily on the Deer Park case, as you heard in his argument. But in fact, in both those cases, decisions were made that Deer Park and Northlake were Type B municipalities and clearly subject to the restrictions and limitations in 43.025. There's actually no conflict between these cases and the cases in the City of Wilmer. The next question I would ask is was there an error of law committed by the Dallas Court of Appeals, which is of such importance to the jurisprudence of this state that it requires correction? We believe not. It is, however, very important to the City of Wilmer and to hundreds of other Type A municipalities across the state who have relied on the literal meaning and the literal wording of this statute for over 100 years. Hundreds of annexations across the state would be void if your decision is in favor of the petitioner in this case. This includes cities which have been providing municipal services to these areas and taxing these areas for years. The City of Wilmer alone has approximately 5 annexations that would all be void. The court in Northlake states that the express reference to size limitations in 43025 and the absence of any reference in 43024 does not imply legislative intent not to impose the 2-mile limitation on type A municipalities.
Does the legislature's periodic, how shall I say, endorsement of municipal actions for the past cure these possibly void annexations?
In my opinion, Your Honor, it cures procedural errors, but not annexations which were void from the beginning.
Mr. Field, what's the rationale for legislative provision that says that 4,000 people or 5,000 people can't create a city of a size greater than 4 square miles? What's the rationale for that?
I believe the legislature has an interest in determining the size and having some control over its cities. And the selection and the restrictions that are in type B municipalities, for instance, are probably designed so that we can keep these at a particular size and have some control over them. The legislature has, through the years, though, either by amendment or by not doing anything, said that type A municipalities can continue to grow. They have to be a certain size when they start, but they can continue to grow.
Now, but is that a rationale then that applies to annexation? If you're still under 5,000 citizens, the state would have a reason for saying you can't increase wouldn't this rationale for saying we want to dictate the size of the boundaries of cities mean that they really don't want them to be able to, you know, they can't be more than 4 square miles when they create themselves? Wouldn't it be the same rationale for saying, but we don't want them just, you know, be able to create themselves 4 square miles and next year go up to 8 square miles? I mean.
Well, you can make that argument, Your Honor, but in fact, they have an interest in determining what their size are when they incorporate. And then they have decided, either by action or inaction, that as far as type A's are concerned, they can begin to increase little by little. And that's what hundreds of municipalities across the state have done. And that's why the type B municipalities who have this restriction, when they want to increase their size, attempt first to change the type A municipalities so they can increase. And that's Deer Park and City of Northlake were unable to make that change to type A municipality, so they could not increase their size through annexation. Apparently, the court in Northlake believes that the actual timetable for the passage of these statutes is important. And you will note that that 43024 for the type A municipalities was actually passed in 1875. 025 was passed in 1895, I believe, in 1903, and 5901, which had a limitation, was passed in 1903. So obviously, 43024 could not have included that particular law. I don't, the conclusion by the petitioner here would just have you assume that the Texas legislature could not have passed a law subsequent to that time to correct that particular issue. We just don't believe that's the case. The petitioner is actually requesting you to add a sentence to the current type A annexation statute, 43024, or he's asking you to ignore that statute and hold that the type B statute controls all type A annexations. You can't find any authority. If Laidlaw desires to have a law changed to limit the annexation authority of type A municipality, it needs to go to the legislature to have that law changed. We have discussed with the officials in the city of Wilmer going to the legislature to try to correct this specific issue. But we believe that we have to go to the legislature and ask them to pass a law that reads just exactly the way this one reads. The history of the legislation is perhaps important. It's pointed out to you perhaps more in the amicus brief than anywhere else. Legislation regarding annexation has changed. It was changed in 63. It was changed in 73. It was changed in 89. The legislature has chosen not to speak to this issue. I think the legislature has decided in their examination of the statutes that they read the way they want them to read. and that this is the way they want to handle the municipalities in the state of Texas. Do you have any questions?
Any questions? Thank you, Kevin.
May it please the court. As Mr. Fielder's indicated, my name is Pat Atkins, and I'm here as well for the court today to represent the city of Wilmington. In the time that the city has remaining, I would like to address a couple of issues and follow up on some issues that have already been raised by both the petitioner and Mr. Fielder in his opening remarks. Specifically, I'd like to follow up on the language from the North Lake case that dealt with the order that these statutes were originally passed by the legislature and the legislative history of those statutes. I would like to follow up on Justice Cornyn's question regarding the state's interest in controlling the size of the municipality. And in any remaining time, we'd like to address why this distinction exists between a Type A and a Type B municipality, and why the legislature would intentionally limit the ability of a Type B municipality to grow beyond its size at the time of incorporation, rather not place that limit upon a Type A municipality. I guess to begin with Justice Cornyn's question, Your Honor, that is the exact same question that was posed by the city of Deer Park. And that is, does not the state have an interest in seeing to it that a city does not grow indefinitely, if we have an interest in seeing that its size is limited at the time of incorporation? And I suppose I would respond to that in two ways. Initially, in the entire structure of Texas municipalities under the local government code, there's a, I suppose, a hierarchical relationship between the cities. At the top, you have the home rule cities, which are your largest communities, which are given the greatest amount of autonomy. Because a home rule city, because of its vast population, will be presented with a unique set of circumstances and unique situations, and we don't want to tie their hands and their ability to address those situations by placing certain statutory limitations that are mandated from Austin. Beneath that on the hierarchy comes the Type A municipality. The Type A municipality are those that have an unlimited maximum size. They could be the same size as a home rule, but that have at least, I believe, 600 cities. Underneath that, you have the Type B municipality and then the Type C. The Type C can have as few as 200 residents and sort of the incorporated village. As the cities go up this hierarchy and as they grow, they're given a greater deal of autonomy or self-rule. Clearly, the state has an interest in regulating the smaller communities, the Type C's and Type B's, to ensure they don't grow by unlimited growth. And that's the very reason why the respondent submits that the area limitations of 5.901 are present with respect to incorporations by Type B and Type C municipalities. But as you move up that hierarchy and get to the Type A of the larger general law municipalities, cities grant greater autonomy. As cited in respondent's brief, there are numerous examples throughout the local government code where the legislature has chosen to draw a distinction between Type A and Type B municipalities. Those distinctions are with respect to finances, form of government, how to deal with specific issues, and their amount of autonomy or self-rule that they're provided. Additionally, as referenced by the Texas Municipal League in its amicus brief, if in fact in 1954 there was a problem, or a perceived problem of the potential for unlimited growth by a Type A municipality, because there are no limits other than those set forth in the incorporation statute, those no longer exist. Because in 1963, the Texas legislature passed the Texas Municipal Annexation Act, and that placed specific limitations on a city's ability, even a Type A city's ability, to annex subsequently to the time of incorporation. The limitations are both legal and practical. For example, the legal limitations include that a Type A municipality can only expand into its area of extraterritorial jurisdiction. It may only increase its total surface area by 10% in any given year. Or alternatively, annex the request, specific request of an adjacent landowner. Under the interpretation of the statutes as advanced by a petitioner, if an adjacent landowner wants to become part of the city, wants to be make himself available to receiving city services, he's unable to do so. He can file a petition requesting the annexation, but if they're already at that 4-square-mile limitation, he's precluded from having his city become a part of, or his property become a part of the city. Additionally, there are limitations that limit a city from being able to annex into the extraterritorial jurisdiction of another municipality, and there are specific width requirements set forth in Section 43054 of the Local Government Code. But in addition to these legal limitations, there are now practical limitations on a city's desire to annex additional territories. For example, the Texas Municipal Annexation Act provides that the city must provide police and fire services to all areas within its corporate limits. But within a certain period of time, they've got to provide emergency medical services, water, wastewater, and solid waste services, and even road maintenance and capital improvements. So if they're going to annex, first they've got to comply with the legal requirements, and second, there are all these additional services that are going to have to be provided to the areas that are annexed within the corporate limits. Therefore, there are limits now. The perceived problem, if there was one, in the city of Deer Park 40 years ago, no longer exists. A type A city can expand its boundaries, but only within these specific legal limits.
Yet, in making those changes in the statute, they did not specifically address Deer Park.
I believe that's correct. There was no specific reference.
Doesn't that mean they acquiesced in that in the court's decision?
And I suppose that comes back to the original question posed by Petitioner's Counsel, and that is, was that language in fact different? It is petitioners taking the position that in fact there were alternative arguments that were considered by the court, both of which were ruled adverse to the city. In fact, on page 287 of the Deer Park case, what the Waco Court of Appeals wrote was that the city never properly became a type B municipality, and therefore the power of the city to annex additional territory must have been derived from the provisions of Article 1135 and not Article 974. In other words, they did not have any authority as a type A. Their only authority came in from as a type B. They never properly became a type A. And 1135 is the predecessor to 43.025, and it included that express limitation of the area limitation at the time of the incorporation. And therefore, that's what the court based its opinion on. It was not an alternative reason. There were not two reasons of event. The court expressly stated, you are not a type A, you are only a type B. And as Mr. Fielders alluded, they went on in dicta to say, if you were a type A, we would have these concerns. I'm not sure the legislature can be presumed to be, by inactivity, approving of every case comments on a statute in dicta, or by way of analogy or in a footnote. And I think that's the flaw in the argument. Additionally, though, as indicated by Mr. Fielder, this statute was passed in 1895. The legislature has had, that's 5.901, the area limitations at the time of incorporation. The legislature has had over 100 years, and in fact 60-some-odd legislative sessions, if it intended to change and incorporate that area limitation to type A. And council has referenced the 1987 incorporation of these provisions into the Local Government Code. We would like the court to note that with respect to two of the sections that were codified, 6.001, 7.001, by way of example. 16.001 was originally, or 6.001, the predecessor statute was passed in 1881, also prior to the predecessor statute of 5.901. 7.001 was passed in 1858, some 37 years prior to the predecessor of 5.901, which is these area limitations. Yet in 1987, when the court codified it, it amended both 7.001 and 6.001 to expressly incorporate the area limitations of 5.901. When the legislature intended these area limitations to apply, it made the change at the time of codification. There was no such change made to 43.94. So the question must be asked, if petitioner's position is correct, if the legislature intended all this time that these area limitations apply, why wasn't 43.024 changed at the same time as 6.001, at the same time as 7.001, to incorporate those area limitations? That change was never made. The legislature never intended those area limitations to apply. to an annexation undertaken by a Type A municipality. There's simply no basis for suing them, not in the law. Unless any of the judges have any additional questions, at this time, I suppose, for the reasons advanced by both Mr. Fielder and myself, the City of Wilmore would pray that this court affirm the opinion of the Dallas Court of Appeals.
Any other questions? Thank you.
May it please the court. In the time held me on rebuttal, I'm going to go ahead and rebut 4 points that were made. The first one is, with respect to the dicta, the argument was what the courts were saying in North Lake and City of Deer Park is that if the facts were different than such and such and so and so. And that's not the case. What the court was saying is if we are wrong with respect to, you know, even if we're wrong with our finding as a matter of law with respect to this conversion from Type B to Type A, for this independent reason, we must affirm the trial court. It is not dicta. The second point is this argument that somehow by merely reaffirming the City of Deer Park, this court is going to be rendering hundreds of annexations void. And I would suggest to the court that is hyperbole. Those hundreds have not been pointed out, and I would submit they don't exist for the reason that Justice Heck pointed out in his question. There have been a whole series of validating statutes, and they don't just apply to procedural insufficiencies, they also apply to voidness.
If they didn't, it might be a concern.
Well, if they didn't, it might be a concern, but a concern that would be answered this way: what is a municipality doing annexing property in the teeth of an annotation that says it cannot be done? In other words, you would have a concern that cities have done something which under the settled law for the last 40 years they've been told by the court they cannot do. So, yes, it could be it would be a concern, but I'm not sure a legitimate concern. But the bottom line is it does not appear to be, in fact, a bona fide real concern precisely because of the validating statutes that this court referred to. The next matter I want to address is the whole question of the rationale for the territory restriction. And what they try to do is say, well, there's this fundamental difference between Type A and Type B, and that explains split. When what we have submitted all along is that no, where the split lies is between the way that home rule municipalities are now treated and the way that general law municipalities with populations of less than 5,000 are treated. And what I would refer the court to with respect to that division is the Texas Constitution, specifically Article 11, Sections 4 and 5. And that constitutional division goes all the way back to 1876. And what has always been recognized in the Texas Constitution is that there is a fundamental split that was changed in 1912 with the adoption of the Home Rule Amendment to those municipalities, such as the City of Wilmer, that are general law municipalities with populations of less than 5,000 and have limited powers. They have less taxing power than homeroom municipalities. They cannot incur bonded indebtedness the same way that homeroom municipalities would do. And what the legislature quite obviously is intending here is to say that we don't want those kind of municipalities to have the same ability to grow as, say, the City of Dallas, which is a homeroom municipality. So that, historically, is where the rationale for the restrictions lie. And it is rational for that limitation, it's only rational, as the City of Deer Park found, for that limitation to apply both to the initial incorporation and to any subsequent annexation. Otherwise, the restriction on the initial incorporation would be rendered absolutely meaningless. In fact, to further bolster that argument, this court should go back and look at the revised Statute 972 that was enacted at the same time as 971 in 1895, in which the legislature says, not only may cities of this small size not incorporate in the future beyond these territorial limits, but if you already have gotten bigger than this, whether by incorporation or by annexation, you have to shrink. You have to shrink back to this size. Now, I would submit to you, it doesn't make any sense to say, in the teeth of that type of statutory provision, for the legislature to say, but that's fine. Once you shrink back on day one, don't worry about it, because on day two, you can get as big as you want. You can get as big as the city of Dallas. That is not a rational reading of that statute, and I am out of time.
Any other questions? Thank you, Paul. That concludes the oral arguments on today's docket. All the foregoing clauses are submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
The audience will please rise. Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned, subject to call.